You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 5, Chapter 21, The Pirate. I realized today they're chaptering these things, and that really makes the episodes of Mando that are in Book of Boba Fett doubly confusing. Chapters usually don't skip story when there's story to be told, but you know, whatever.
Issues of comic books do. That's what I'm saying. You just have to embrace the comic book nature of the storytelling here.
Yeah, true. How do you find this episode, Aaron?
It's another action first episode for The Mandalorian, which I always enjoy. Like, you know, who doesn't want to see a squad of Mandalorians? I mean, it's just ludicrously cool, right? A commando unit of Mandalorians landing in the middle of a planet being besieged by pirates and just wrecking shop. It's like SEAL Team 6 shutting down Barbarossa from Pirates of the Caribbean in the future. Like, it's extremely cool. It's very neat. I liked all of the action. I have been waiting to see this armor open up with that hammer for four years now, and it was glorious.
And the tongs.
Going out of hammer and tong, literally. Mm-hmm. I am increasingly skeptical of what they're doing with the politics of this show, though. And not even just the cult stuff. Like, it seems like the double F's are hell-bent on making the chronology of the sequel trilogy make sense. Like, they have to have the New Republic just already sliding into full Imperial, control. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate because it just makes the New Republic look like a whole bunch of buffoons. But also, it's also a bad sign when it's like, I don't know if you should be painting with shades of gray like this on a Saturday morning cartoon, because, like, I feel like I'm taking the wrong sides on a couple of these things, or at least the sides that the show doesn't want. Now, they might be accounting for this, and they're going to do some kind of epic philosophical political judo flop at the end that really impresses me, but, like, I don't know. And it's keeping me a little bit from fully engaging with the material. What about you?
Yeah, no, those shades of gray are definitely there. I'm looking at the Elliot stuff or whatever her name is, Aliyah Kane. I'm like, boy, yeah, this stuff is, they've got me on the fence about this stuff, and that's good in most shows, and I think that's good here. It's just like, when are they going to drop the other shoe? Because there is clearly another shoe to drop. But yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was fun. I found it a little strange that, Mando's taken his crew over to Navarro, and he's just going to live there now with the rest of them, because I was kind of expecting them to do something with IG-11, but they haven't even reassembled IG-11's statue. Like, it's still half disassembled, laying in a junkyard somewhere. They don't give a shit about IG-11. Now that they have new protectors, they're never going to reassemble him.
Are you challenged? I mean, because, like, I feel like them continuing to show the statue with the part of him that's actually him missing.
Right,
is
checking in and letting us know. Yeah, but what do they need him for at this point? He's already accomplished the mission that he was trying to get IG-11 for. Now they have far better protectors than IG-11 could ever be, and a whole gang of them.
That's true. You have
what do you need him for?
100 Boba Fetts now. You're fucking done. I played with him on the tabletop. He's doing twin attack, dual attacks, dishing out 4d20 damage every turn. You can't stop him. Now that they got 100 of them,
just let IG-11 rest, man.
It will be an epic fail if they don't do anything with IG-11 this season, right? Like, it'll be Chekhov's droid, battle droid that just never Chekhov's. Mm-hmm. Never checks on.
Totally. Yeah. So I don't know what they're doing with him. But yeah, the other stuff is interesting, I suppose. I like Captain Teeva. You know, he's the guy who's been
kind of
rambling around the galaxy here in the New Republic, and always sort of out on the Outer Rim. I guess that's his post.
I do like that. That feels like if you take out the New Republic of it all, I do like the way they're weaving in this story about the Marshals and the Rangers and the Mid and Outer Rim Border Patrols, and it gives it a very mm-hmm. you know, the Mandalorians always had this kind of Wild West or explicitly Western feel, and these guys remind me kind of like the cavalry, right, that are out there saving people from raiders and whatnot.
It seems like he knows what's up too, which I appreciate. He sees the things that are happening out here. He's like, this is something's going on here.
Right.
And we need to nip it in the bud, and boy, I'm with him.
And he really wants the New Republic to succeed and live up to their ideals. Mm-hmm. Which is that admirable. Too. You like that.
But it might be impossible logistically. So who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. So good episode. What do you say about getting into the recap?
Let's do it. This is the ad break. We will return. I have spoken.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
This podcast is in your care. Welcome back to Tribe of Two.
All right, we start off with Gorian Shard showing up in Navarro. Grief tries to bluff him into leaving, but Shard calls his bluff and begins indiscriminately blowing up the city and its residents. Grief refuses to abandon his people. He's going to evacuate them all.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Another libertarian's going to learn the lesson of rugged free market enterprise with no cooperation with any government. So it's like, we don't want to fucking pay taxes to the New Republic. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, mm-hmm. We're being attacked by a giant space pirate. Call the fucking New Republic.
Yep.
We want them to send us the service that we have scorned and not pay. Like, what? Okay. All right. This is going to be my core problem with the episode, because like I don't know. I don't know what you do in this. Like, I start watching, I'm like, oh wow, the Mandalorian's going to deal with some like tricky resource allocation management, but nope, it's just that they're effectively going to have a radical street gang that they're going to bribe into fighting off the pirates, and that's Grief Karga being a genius. He's
sure.
He's just really, really going on his own out there. It's a bizarre setup for this thing.
Yeah. It's also a little bizarre to me that they're retreating to a place with no cover, like the lava flats seem. If Gorishard's goal is to kill you, retreating to a wide open space is probably not the best way to go. Unless you spread out. I mean, if you just say, okay, you run that direction, you run that direction, everybody runs a different direction.
Right.
Miles like, apart, maybe.
I refuse to abandon the city, except with all of the businessmen, we're going to just run off into the desert, abandoning the city. And it's he's... I don't know. He's the C-3PO droid, the hatchet-faced C-3PO droid, mm-hmm. tries to say they want to negotiate, and he's like, no, we don't negotiate with pirates. It sets a bad precedent. But I'm like, well, why don't you negotiate them to keep them from destroying your city and then betray them to the New Republic when they arrive to punish them? Or
bad
the,
precedent, Aaron. Who's going to work with them if they betray the people they've struck deals
the
with?
The pirates? The yep. pirates? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all bad faith, too, because he's like, oh, you shot my helmsman for no fucking reason. Well, your helmsman was shooting up our school for no fucking reason. Ah, oh, well, I'm going to shoot. It's like, these are pirates. These are pirates. Right. Pirates, for all time, have their lives been forfeit to every civilized sector of the world ever. Ever. Like, pirate flag, you're going to be hunted by literally every other legitimate thing on the sea. So, like, yeah, fuck them.
Download an MP3. We're going to get you. We're going to murder you.
You wouldn't pirate a house.
Space station.
You wouldn't steal a space station. Yeah. You wouldn't. Sure. You wouldn't pirate a independent libertarian trade planet, would you? Ah, shit. You would. Fuck. Well, we got no answer to that. Our DVD campaign failed. Yeah.
Captain Teeva gets a message from Greef asking the New Republic to help them with the pirate situation. Teeva decides to go back to Coruscant to ask for permission to intercede. How long is that flight? It's pretty short, right? You're on the Outer Rim. You fly to Coruscant. It takes, what, a day?
It takes
a couple hours.
Not, no joke. It's kind of an established thing in Star Wars that the faster hyperspace ships can cross the galaxy in a day. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, like, well established. It's happened many, many times. So, like, Star Wars galaxy is small.
Yeah, sounds ridiculous. I personally send the message and I start heading back. I don't ignore the message because the message is probably going to travel faster. Although if you're traveling faster than light, the message can't travel faster than you. So
you can also do hyperspace communications too. Come on.
Can you?
But surely.
I mean, it would only make sense. Otherwise, communicating would take ages.
Did they come up with an alien arrangement for like Vietnam era war rock that they're listening to on this base? Like, this is this the alien is this the Tatooine version of Fortunate Son that they're playing? Because like I got that vibe, that like psychedelic rock, you know.
Yeah, there was something different about the theme this episode.
Captain Teeva smoking snake leaf with his boys in the barracks as they complain about their lack of resources and the cynicism of the New Republic. And
yeah, a little napalm in the morning kind of stuff. Sure.
Smells like failure in Outer Rim. did you recognize this large alien?
Gorian Shard?
No, the one that's talking to Teeva here, that they have a conversation.
Oh, the big Batman, as I was calling him?
Yeah.
No, should I have?
Well, so I did, as much as I have a no cartoon stance on this show, I did, you know, my son was the appropriate age. We watched a fair bit of the first season of Rebels, and I didn't remember this guy's name. And I'm actually sure this is Zeb Aurelius. Who is one of the main characters in the Rebels series, and he's a Lasat. And this alien design is based on the original Ralph McQuarrie sketch for Chewbacca. And they brought it in as essentially as a new type of Wookiee, because he essentially plays the Chewbacca role, except for he speaks basic.
With changing that design. Mm-hmm. This guy not nearly as lovable looking. You put vampire bat ears on him and call him Lestat, and I think you have a lot of people making fun of that.
Yeah,
but Chewbacca is a much better design.
This guy, Ralph McQuarrie, like came up with some kind of cadaverous rotted fish face looking fucker, and Chewbacca was definitely better. But I like how they rifled through the old designs to come up with this guy. And again, I don't know if this is Zeb or not. It makes no difference to me whether it is or not, or if he's just some other random Lasat. But yeah, if you're one of them, they're Rebel fans, probably buzzing.
Yeah. All right, Teeth asks, a New Republic colonel back on Coruscant for the resources to protect Navarro. He gets the brush off, mostly thanks to Alaya Kane. Her meddling? Why would she stick her nose into this if she was not working for whatever faction is out there against
She's
the New Republic?
She's working for whatever faction's in there. Like, this is the... Yeah, this isn't... I thought maybe this she was working for the New Republic. And she is, but there's some kind of double, triple, quadruple agent thing going on here.
Right. It was pretty ambiguous last time we saw her, which I enjoyed. I thought that was good. Here, it becomes a little less ambiguous because there's no way she jumps in this conversation unless she's up to no good. Or maybe, I don't know, let's spin this. Let's say, oh, well, Elia's just looking out for the best interest of the New Republic. This planet has declared independent. They have resources that are already spread so thin, maybe they can't afford to waste them on that, and she knows it. She's worried that the Colonel is a softie, and he's going to go protect this independent planet at the cost of the New Republic planets.
Am I a terrible person for, like, totally agreeing with that argument? Like,
no.
It's one thing if you have plenty and everything is stable and you're like, our neighbor's under attack, let's go help them, and maybe that will win them over to our side. That'll be something that we can use to bring them into the fold. But, like, that's not the painting that's not the portrait that's being painted of the New Republic.
Right.
You do have to make tough decisions on who gets assistance and who doesn't when you've got scarcity like this going on. And like, yeah, fuck, like it just really kind of grinds my gears that Greef Karga is that the first episode is like, yeah, fuck those New Republic. We're going to be lean and independent, and we're not going to pay our New Republic taxes, and we're going to exploit the loopholes and be in both. And then, like, the second that the obvious thing that was it would happen in that is that you're one fucking world against a million and you're going to get your ass stomped in happens. And then, like, oh, come and help us. And
yeah,
maybe it would be admirable if they did. But, like, it's entirely understandable for a bureaucrat in Coruscant to be like, yeah, there just ain't the ships, man. I'm not going to let three Republic worlds fall to save this fucking outpost.
Yeah, that has not contributing to our cause and renounced us and all these things. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Maybe they can cast Tim Meadows in this role and me take him seriously if he plays it to be taken seriously. But Tim Meadows is playing his kind of like well-meaning doofus routine.
Yeah, totally.
And like, it really is it's really a misstep. It's not something they should be doing.
Is it, or is it exactly what they intend? I mean, I look at the way that they're portraying the New Republic here, and it's not flattering. It's a bunch of entitled, self-concerned socialites. It's a bunch of barely functional government, a bunch of people using Imperial technology and claiming that, like, this has nothing to do with the Imperials. We'll use it different. We use it for healing, not killing. And it's this guy who's kind of, yeah, like you said, a bit of a bumbling doofus.
How do
I think they're intentionally
the Empire,
doing this?
Or is, like, did the Empire just collapse because they're like, that's the ultimate end game for all fascist regimes? You just eat yourself from within? Because
perhaps,
like,
yeah.
Or maybe they just only had the unifying threat. But like,
it makes sense globally in this story, but it's clearly what they're trying to portray the New Republic as.
No, I get it. I just don't know that I like that they're portraying the New Republic as just a clown show. Like, it's just very like, yeah, that's a way to erase the shades of gray and then make them less impactful. So I don't know.
Totally.
And also I'm getting super whiplash going from Andor to this.
Mm-hmm.
Where you actually had, like, imagine Luthen here in Teyvat. Like, if he went to Luthen and been like, hey, got this guy, didn't want to join the Republic, said something about being a libertarian free trade zone, didn't want to pay taxes, now they're getting their ass stomped by pirates. Luthen would not only not help, he'd probably send a couple proton torpedoes to finish the job. and like let the word get out that this is what happens when you don't fucking back the New Republic against the Empire and piratical regimes. You fucking Outer Rim fucks. Who do you think? Yeah, that's exactly how that would go. And I'd kind of like, yeah, all right, that's kind of tough love, but
yeah, it's definitely
math
like
checks
a,
out.
It's definitely like a new boss, same as the old boss kind of thing that they're doing with the New Republic, where like the Empire was sloppy for different reasons. They were overconfident. Here, the New Republic is sloppy because they're just not good at this.
Right. You got the fascists were too gripped up and too brittle and too tried to control everything.
Right.
And the
too
New
rigid.
Republic
and,
is
and
just
they
like,
believed that they had control over every single thing.
Right. And the New Republic is just like, hey, what is control even, man? You know?
Sure. So there's like two sides of the same coin. And I guess I admire what they're trying to do with that, I guess, but I don't know that they're doing it super successfully. Certainly not as successfully as something like Andor did its story.
And it's fine. Like I said, Mandalorian doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be Andor. It doesn't have to be the Mandalorian, but...
But it's reaching for those toys, right?
It
like
It's
playing with
it
those toys,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of breaking them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
It's fine. I do like Teeva. I like that he's inventive here. You know, he's got a soft spot for the people out on Navarro because he's been with them. He's on the Outer Rim. He probably knows some of these people. And there is a solution to be had out there, and he finds it. And I think that's good.
He's a good cop, underfunded, pressed for resources, but still trying to do the right thing with the things he has at his disposal. Trying to make, you know, trying to help people help themselves. A lot of the New Republic's not going to help, but I know this kind of insane culty street gang that could probably do something, and there'll be no knock on consequences of a resurgent Mandalorian Empire under the control of religious nut jobs. So yeah, let's just do that.
Yeah. 10 years from now, he's going to be like, God damn it, I wish I could take this helmet off.
Yeah, as armies of millions of Mandalorians that... Yeah, oh, yeah, you can't even... Yeah,
yeah, he's part of it, yeah.
All must become Mandalore. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I have a bit of a problem with his methods, but we'll talk about it.
Can you imagine practicing that on fucking... Coruscant, where there are 100 quadrillion people living, like,
oh my god,
where can I get away from everyone to eat? You know, there's not enough not enough square feet on the fucking planet.
You have to have stacked eating pods. Like,
that's what you do. They're just like tubes, like half the size of those coffin capsules they have for the salaryman in Tokyo.
You
step in there and you scarf the food down a simple because, like, you only get 30 seconds,
right? Just build the food into the suits. That's what I say.
There you go. They got all kinds of pouches. They're just going to be loaded with Capri Suns full of organic nutrients.
Yeah, they camel packs, their... right? You just...
Exactly.
Yeah, you get that tube, stick it under the helmet, and you're good.
Just go on an all applesauce diet. This is the way.
At least they can take their pants off, because that could be bad.
Yeah.
All right, Grief leads his evacuees to camp, to the camp, which is behind a rock. It's a big rock, to his credit, I guess. He promises them help from the New Republic, but who knows if that's coming.
Did you pay our New Republic taxes? No, wait, let's just, one question. Yeah. Like, I like how these people, oh my god, like, they were so proud of being independent, and... I mean, I don't know. It's funny because, like, you know, we had that bank run a couple weeks ago, and I'm probably speaking out of turn, but like, I just thought it was really funny that all these Silicon Valley tech bros who have disrupted the shit out of our country and our economy was suddenly like, "Oh, did anyone else know that our deposits are only insured up to $400,000? What the fuck is this bullshit? Where's our bank?" Like, I'm like, I don't know, man. You got disrupted, dude. You got disrupted. But anyway, let's move on before we piss off a third of the audience.
Yeah. Oh, I have a lot to say, but we should probably move on. Teeva flies out to the Mando's covert to ask for their help with the situation on Navarro. He gives Mando the message from Grief, then takes off, and Mando uses this message to petition the rest of the Mandos for an intervention to save Navarro. Also, he decides to go for the double ask here, which is pretty impressive, pretty ballsy. He also tells him, hey, we should just all move over to Navarro and stay on my land now that I'm a magistrate as well. He's probably a low magistrate. I don't know.
Yeah. A mid magistrate.
Yeah. And Paz Vizsla gets up and backs him because Mando saves his son. And everyone's like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a, like, I was actually surprised at how fucking pussy the Mandalorians were being. Like, you know, they're like, oh, I don't want to fight. Like, you guys are a bunch of fucking bounty hunters. You fight for money just cause.
True.
Like, I think that, you know, if you had a cause that you could believe in, like, you know, having your children live without fear and playing in the sun, that they will never feel on their poor little faces because they're wearing helmets 24/7, 365. Anyway. I didn't buy it for a second. I'm like, there's no fucking way Paz is going to stand up there on his tree trunk legs and say and sell the Mandalorian out. No way. No way. Not with that previously on they showed for this episode. There's no way.
For sure. Yeah, I was gonna say, I liked how Teeva found them because that's a pretty complicated roundabout way to get there, but I loved it. Because R5 apparently had some tracking chip in him or something because he was part of the rebellion's forces at one point. Uh-huh. And then they've got R5 now that Mando bought him from Peli Motto. I think it's a long way around, but I think it worked out pretty well.
I think it's funnier if R5 actually made an official request to be extracted by the New Republic because he's like, yeah, I thought Star Trench was dangerous. This fucking Mando shit is crazy. I saw a crate dragon. There's not even supposed to be real. Like, yeah. Get me out of here. Get me out of here. I'm a vet. I'm a combat veteran, right. And I demand to be extracted.
Yeah,
I like the cultural detail of them holding the hammer like it's the conch. You know, whoever holds the hammer gets to speak to the all the tribes. I thought that was pretty cool. It was funny how they had to, you know, for the sake of drama, have the entire covert kind of like going against the tide of helping the man. Like, they're all kind of murmuring and skeptical. And then Paz gets up there and whips them up. And then they're really, and then Paz is like, I want to know why we're going to fight. It's because we're fucking Mandalorians and all the then like within 10 seconds, all the other Mandalorians look at each other. Oh, that's true. We are Mandalorians. This is what we do. Shit. What were we grumbling for? It's, I don't know. Not very stoic, this covert. They're gossipy little bitches in the shadows of the cave.
Yeah, they complicate it because now somebody knows where they are, right? Teeva knows.
Where their covert is,
and so now they have to move, but he promises not to tell anyone, but they're still gonna move.
Yeah. It's like they're the pain of moving is already imposed upon them, so.
Yeah, so I guess the thing I love about that is, like, the solution wasn't there, really, until Teeva comes in and blows up their spot, and then they're forced to leave. Like, Teeva creates the problem for them that allows them to come do his dirty work. So it's a little manipulative on his part because he knows. Mm. He obviously knows. As soon as he flies in here, this covert is blown up and they're going to have to leave.
But does he know that the Mando's got a land offer from Krieg?
No, certainly. He's just thinking, like, well, they're either going to go along with my plan and I'll get what I want, or I'm going to force their hand by making them move somewhere. And he's just shitty. He goes in here and totally disrupts
especially
their
at
lives.
The end where he's like, hey, I just want you to know, I know you're gonna move no matter what I do, but just so you know, I'm gonna get the cheap social credit promising that I'd never ever betray your location. Like, okay.
No, it's kind of a shitty thing to do. Anyway, so they're on their way to Navarro, the Mandalorians, and they're planning their operation. Looks like it's going to be a two-pronged attack, which we'll see here in a bit. I couldn't help but notice when Bo is talking to everyone here, she is talking in yous and not us's. And I think that's different. That feels different than the previous episodes, and I don't know what's changed here.
Say that again.
When she's like, you all, you know, believe in this and you all do this, it's not we, it's not us.
Who, but is that Bo or the armor? Bo is saying.
And I get it. She's not like officially part of this, but she kind of is. Like, the armor has made her, you know, brought her back into the way or whatever. And she's
interesting,
not talking like she's part of this covert, which is a little strange.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I admired in the previous episode how the Mandalorians all fought as, like, individual warriors. They weren't using, like, unit tactics, and they're just kind of, like, improvising. And it felt like a game of pickup basketball where it's like, you know, they don't have, like, tactics and strategies planned out. They're just it's an all-star game, right? I hear Bo saying, like, to make this work, you're going to have to fight as an integrated unit. And we see them do that, which I don't know if it's as cool as them just kind of like being the just really superlative one-on-one warriors that also kind of mesh well together. But I don't know. I guess it was.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if it's cool seeing the Mandalorians be like a SEAL unit and doing all the little hand gestures and all that kind of crap. That's what they're going to do.
I mean, this stuff takes a lot of training. I don't think you could just drill a couple of times on your way over to the battle and have that down cold.
Right. So apparently the Mandalorians all train to fight as a unit for their bounty hunter missions. So,
but then they just don't. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to that fight. The pirates are partying it up on Navarro when Mando's team arrives and begins attacking Gorian ship. Mando's drop down to the surface and begin taking back the city. The pirates resist, but you know how this goes. Gorian shards killed in the attack, and Vane gets away. Think.
Oh wow. That right? You're just covering the whole damn thing. Yeah, Vane.
Yeah,
does
let's talk
get
about
away.
The whole thing. I have a real hard time imagining that the Mandalorians could ever get quote unquote boxed in.
Dude, how do
they
you box
they,
in troops
each and
with
everyone to a person has a jetpack on their back?
Yes.
And they're like, oh, we're getting flanked, boys. No, fly, right. You idiots, fly.
And they're saved by someone flying into the... Yeah, no, I thought that was going to be a point. Like, I was like leaning forward in my chair. It's like, oh my God, these pirates are going to try to flank these guys, and they're just going to get punished with their superior mobility. But no. The Mandalorians sort of forgot that they could fly.
Ridiculous.
And they cannot be pinned down in two-dimensional terms. They got the Z-axis unlocked.
This jetpacks as tools of convenience for the writers are... It's a sad state. I hate
it's
this
fine.
Stuff. This
All
is the
need...
stuff that makes this show a joke to me, is when they have obvious outs and they're writing for effect and not considering the tools that they have at their disposal.
I'm not sure which of the two scenarios I'm about to outline is sadder, because I keep on thinking when I see this shit, it's like, there's got to be just a shit ton of lieutenant colonels with nothing to do now that the war on terror is over. Can we not hire a few to consult for these Hollywood writers to just kind of draw up some basic strat that would like actually be cool and stuff that we haven't seen before and reflect the capabilities of a modern 21st century fighting force, let alone something that's supposed to, you know, be 10,000 years... I'm not sure it's more depressing that they just don't. They're just like, nah, fuck it. We're going to do the same kind of cowboys and Indian shit we've been doing since the 40s and 50s. And no one understands a bit of this stuff, or that they have hired said lieutenant colonels. And this is what they're coming up with, because
it can't be.
They kind of suck at their jobs. I don't know. I wouldn't think so either.
I mean, sitting on my couch eating Doritos,
right. That's
thinking,
true.
Man, why don't they use their jetpacks? Yeah. I would hope a colonel would. Do something better than that, but what do you
but
know?
They're running with the rule of cool, and it is super cool to see Paz hit the streets like a 1,000-pound drop ship and just start laying down to pain.
Yeah, he's a tank.
There's some nice momentum flows back and forth. I like that the pirates decide to abuse and terrorize the lizard monkeys in the tree to salacious crumbs, and then it pays off the next scene when the monkeys are telling the Mandalorians they're walking into an ambush. I thought that was pretty funny.
Like
I thought
the armor
coming down and laying down the law, it that did not disappoint. I also think it's... where are you at with these space pirates literally being Pirates of the Caribbean with, like, bionic shit strapped to them?
I mean, you're not wrong.
I think it's crazy.
Do you think I... Yeah, are you asking, do I like it?
Yeah.
I don't warmed like up to Gorian Shard's design this episode.
That's the one thing that's still, ugh.
I was thinking it's cool to have a plant-based life form, I guess. Because you don't see that very often. A lot of the times it's more like creature-based, right? It's like animals or something like that. But to have a plant-based life form, I think it's cool. Like, there's got to be some kind of plant-based thing out there that's sentient.
I don't know. It just definitely looks to me like they took the Swamp Thing and Davy Jones and they just, like, blended it in Lightwave 3D model and there you go. But
yeah, for sure.
I like that the pirate ship kind of looks like a pirate ship. It's got a prow. It's got rows of, like, cannons on each side. I like especially that it has a big old wheel, a captain's wheel that he gets to spin. Mm. And I also just really like, I think that there's something visceral about naval combat that I like when they do this with, like, Star Wars or Star Trek. And we see this on Picard too, but, like, yeah, there's something about, like, just blowing up some dude's ship and having him crash that's just very satisfying. It really punctuates, like, this giant ship crashing into the outskirts of the city and detonating. It's very, very satisfying and visceral.
Yeah, I like the coordinated attack, the two-prong thing where Mando leads him away in his extremely fast and agile N1. That thing, I continue to be thoroughly impressed by the N1. Yeah. Its maneuverability, its speed, it's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great ship for Mando
right
forever, but it's really been a nice change of pace, this, like, kind of elegant scalpel compared to the sledgehammer he had before. Yeah.
If he was trying to bring the Razor Crest into here, he would get it just destroyed by those guns.
And I like that, too. Like, they have this thing where it's like this light assault transport can kind of sort of menace the pirate ship, but, like, it's completely overmatched when the Snubfighters get there. And just as the Snubfighters about to, you know, Mando shows up and take... Yeah, it's really cool. It's and I even like the way that the... their snub fighters are lashed to the deck like the boats of a sailing vessel would be. Like, sure. It's even like the design of the ship. It's like there is a recessed area that's kind of like the deck with the gunnels on the side. And I get a kick out of the Age of Sail shit in the galaxy far, far away. It's really cool.
Gunnels. Are those, is that just like a pirate version of gun holes?
It's a shortened form of gun whales. I think it's the sides of the ship.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that's the battle. And then afterward, Greef thanks the Mandalorians and officially gives them some land on Nevarro. Then Bo is summoned by the armorer and she asks Bo to remove her helmet. So she does. The armorer says over and over and over again that all the Mandalorians have to walk together. And apparently Bo is the one who's going to unite them. Then they both go out to the other Mandos and the armor explains Bo is going out to find other Mandos so they can retake Mandalore. She is a Daywalker. She is Blade. She can walk between the worlds.
Yeah. She's being sent forth as a proselytizer. She's evangelizing the way of the Mandalore. Like the Apostle Paul going to the Acropolis. I don't know, man. They definitely are playing this with a hint of menace. You see it on Bo-Katan's face when the armor is like, you know, all of Mandalore must come together as one. And but there's also the hint of maybe they will find what is the essential parts of the way. You know, like being there together and camaraderie and sharing things communally and taking care of the young ones and showing them the way and maybe realize that the other things aren't as important. Because I know, like, there's a lot of people, I follow a little bit of, like, some ex-cult recovery groups and whatnot, and there's a lot of them that are Star Wars fans, and there's a lot of concern about what we talked about last week, which is the Mandalorian maybe soft pedaling the effects of these kind of cults. And and there's enough of, like, dark music and, like, dark looks, but I'm not exactly sure where they're going with this.
Yeah.
I always thought it was going to be, yeah, they're going to find some middle path where it's like the things that are cool and admirable about this kind of like religious unity could be retained, and the things that are controlling and dehumanizing could be moderated or ejected. But like, I honestly don't know where they're going. Do you still think that's a path that's open, or are they just going to be like, no, actually the way of the Mandalore is cool and everyone should walk it?
It's feeling more like they're pushing toward the latter now, and that the redemption here is going to come through Bo, and it's going to be her just full conversion. Because I still think she isn't there, right? And like, part of the reason is, so I mentioned that stuff earlier about her speaking in yous instead of us's, to get to this scene where I think the armorer is noticing that. I think she's noticing she's not fully committed to this thing, and she's sending her essentially on a pilgrimage or a test of faith, right? Out there to find other Mandos, to go be of service to this cult. I think it's a dangerous path, but she probably knows that because there's a lot of, you know, temptations and different ideas out there and stuff. But it's like a Rumspringa, right? This is her Rumspringa.
I was about to say.
And she's going to go off. She's going to find Woody Harrelson and Bill Murray, and she's going to get really good at bowling.
Oh, yeah. Scam all the ex-Imperials at laser bowling.
Uh-huh. I don't know. That's what it felt like to me. Like, this is all... The stakes here are the heart and mind of Bo-Katan, not like, are the Mandalorians going to change? Because the more I see, the more it's like, they don't want the Mandalorians to change.
Hmm.
They want the world to come around to the Mandalorians rather than the other way around.
Yeah, and the thing is like, I think you can have whatever weird religious practice that has meaning for you that you want to do. Like, I don't even have a problem with, like, people wearing helmets, you know? There's many religious societies today that expect, like, you know, certain extreme forms of dress and restrictive forms of dress to show piety, right? You know, it's like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, excommunication is a human rights violation.
Yeah.
Once it goes from individual matter of faith to like everyone that you know and love in the community is going to eject you. Yeah,
it's believe or else. There's a threat there, right? There's leverage applied and a threat, and yeah, it's pretty gross.
And like I said, I think it's also like if communities, like if you're behaving in a way that's offensive to communities and you get in the cold shoulder by everyone, again, making a decision is like, this person's acting crazy and we don't support this and we don't want, like, that's probably fine too. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I grew up in a fucking cult where like teenagers got cut off from their families because they got a tattoo or smoked or stuff, shit like that, had premarital sex.
Yeah.
And I just can't roll with that. I'm sorry. Like, if that's what the Mandalorian's like, I'm going to be very unhappy if I'm not super unhappy because a lot of people in email have asked us, because I do think I'd expect that they're going to do something else, because there is a little bit enough of the hint of menace in what's going on here. Even in the storytelling they're doing, that I think they realize that, but like, boy,
okay.
Oof, I am a little more nervous after this episode than I have been before.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Especially since Bo seems to be swallowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it makes a lot of sense, because like I said, her experience is a bunch of feckless fuckboy Mandalorians that abandon you when the glory is gone or you lose your sword. And I understand, like, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this or this is something I was talking about in social media, but like, from the outside, a lot of people that don't have familiar with the inner workings of the cults, a lot of stuff does look admirable. Like, look at these people coming together to, like, rebuild this home that got destroyed in a hurricane. Or look at the fact that, like, you know, you can go, like, any covert can go to any other covert and be accepted as a brother. And there's no questions asked. And the unity and the apparent love and all that stuff. But, like, that is such a facade that they maintain to the outside world. And they, you know...
Well, it's a control mechanism.
It's
getting people accustomed to that lifestyle and that benefit and using it as a lever to keep them engaged in the behaviors they want them engaged in.
But it's also not genuine brotherhood and unity. A lot of times it's performative. on pain of like punishment and excuse. Yeah, like that. You know,
I've known
like
some people who genuinely
certainly
do that stuff and feel that way. But yeah, it's, I've
but
also
there's
known
also
the
a
opposite.
Lot of artificial, fakey, you mm-hmm. know, kind of thing too. So I and they haven't really shown even when Jin Jaren got excommunicated, it was kind of like, well, he fucked up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to atone, and you know he believes he needs to atone. So I'm medium worried about where they're going with this, and it's not just that; it's the Tim Meadows of everything. It's the clownish, cartoonish way they're dealing with their shades of gray, and it's like, yeah, they are playing with these very adult toys in a very Saturday morning context, and I am a little worried that it's going to impinge upon my enjoyment.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, that's not the end of the episode. It could have been the end of the episode, but they decided to put one more sequence in here where Tiva is out flying just in the middle of nowhere. Just the middle of nowhere. He's out in space, and he stumbles upon a damaged Imperial shuttle, and he investigates, discovers, oh, it's actually Moff Gideon's transport ship, and his body is missing. There's a fragment of... Wow, autocorrect just went fucking buck wild on that word. There's a fragment of Beskar.
What did it correct it to?
Bessarabia?
What the hell?
I've never heard that word in my life, and it capitalized it too.
Wow.
So,
you just insulted the two great religions in the Outer Rim. Yeah.
Anyway, there's a fragment of Beskar on the ship. And
edit
they
that
jump...
out, Jesus.
There's a fragment of Beskar on this, Bessarabia on this ship, and they jump to the wholly unsupported, in my opinion, conclusion that Mandalorians must have freed Gideon. Because there's Beskar. I mean, look, Werner Herzog had Beskar. Like, you can't claim that Mandalorians are the only ones right. in possession of Beskar. That's absurd.
Plus, it's if you believe that shit, it's the easiest thing in the world to
right.
frame.
Right.
It's like if they wanted to like blame Rastafarians, like look at this knitted rainbow hat. It's only it's like it, come on.
Especially
come
since
on.
They abandoned the mines, the Beskar mines, which are clearly like you can go down there, you could get Beskar out of it.
Right. Yeah.
And now there's no yeah. Mandalorian. Because before, maybe, okay, you had to kill a Mandalorian, right? And take this. And that was tough. So it'd be harder to, like, fake something like that. But
still
now
not
you can just go to
Mandalorians
Mandalore.
Died. Like, I'm pretty sure there's totally, been wars yeah. and battles. And it's odd that they do leap to this conclusion, but that befits its Saturday morning cartoon nature. Because,
and I think
like,
Tiva's skeptical of it, too. I don't think he's buying it. I think he's
yeah.
like, hmm.
Well, my question is, do you think that the Mandalorian... Because here's the thing. I think there's two possibilities. It could be that the Moff Gideon is framing the Mandalorians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It could also be that these lost exile sheep of Mandalorians that abandoned Bo-Katan and whatever are working for Moff Gideon. They were hired to do this
yeah.
job. And it's not that all of Mandalorians are like pro-Imperial. It's just that, you know, this one band is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thin line between bounty hunter and mercenary,
but it's
right?
also really hard to believe that any Mandalorians would willingly aid the Empire after they
sure.
genocided yeah. their planet. So it's like you'd have to be an exceptionally cynical, hard-bitten, fuck-it type of Mandalorian to go along with that.
Totally. And maybe those
Is
who
it
are
weird?
Following Bo are. I don't know.
Is it weird to you that they lost Moff Gideon's transport, that like until they found the wreckage
yeah,
and investigated it, that like so that implies that there's someone in the New Republic that is.
And
like,
this
massage.
Classified ship right there. There were details on a ship that was in the area or whatever that's missing. And those details are classified. That's wild.
I did like the R2 unit's little periscope detaching and flying around as a remote drone. Like
uh-huh.
that
yeah.
makes a lot of sense. For again, I just love when they retro discover these astromech capabilities that make them really good astromechs. It's super cool. And
yeah.
it's, you know, for a Saturday morning cartoon, kind of grisly. Like this reminded me of the scene in The Abyss where they're going through the Russian sub and they're just like. The remote vehicles are floating through and there's just dead Russians floating everywhere. And it's like, they didn't have, I'm surprised they didn't have a space crab come out of one of their mouths. This as a jump scare, But it's like, yeah, it's like this is kind of macabre for the Saturday morning aesthetic that they're going for.
Yeah, every once in a while they do something like that. I like it.
Gives you a little PG-13 flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Give chills to all the 7-year-olds out there watching.
We have to rid this planet of enemy sorcerers. We'll be right back. The Beskar belongs to the Mandalorians. This podcast belongs to you. Here's more Tribe of Two. That's it?
I have feedback.
All right.
Shall we consider it?
Please.
Mando@baldmove.com is how you want to send feedback to us. First up is Sean. He says, for the most recent Mando, the ship that Jedi Kelleran escaped on was owned by the Naboo Senator. Padme flew it in episode 2, but at the time of the Order 66, Jar Jar Binks is the canonical Naboo Senator. So you're getting a double Ahmad Best redemption, because his much maligned character, Jar Jar Binks, apparently has organized the shuttle to save the younglings of Coruscant.
Apparently. And
it's saved by actual Ahmad Best. So
can I throw some cold water on this?
Do it.
Can I say they probably make more than one of each type of speeder, and this could be one of any, like, that's saying, oh, it's a Ford Focus, so it must be your mom's.
Well, I mean, come on. But isn't it a thing that the Naboo royal family does reserve the right to use the chrome ships for, like, their official diplomat? So it's like,
I'm sure that's what they're going for, you know? Yeah. But real world, there are probably, like, millions of those made.
Jim is a Jar Jar truther, apparently. He's not buying the official narrative here. Sean says, also, if you are ever able, especially before Ahsoka airs, please watch the last 4 episodes of The Clone Wars. As a lifelong OT Star Wars fan that's jaded with the prequels and most of Disney Star Wars, the last 4 episodes are some of the best ever made. Well, you know what, Sean? Bold of you to assume that I'm going to watch Ahsoka.
Uh-huh.
Ahsoka, Ahsoka, let alone this fucking cartoon shit you keep pushing on me. No, I'm never going to. You know what? I am never, ever. I'm not having any more children. I've been destroyed in that capacity. That's the only possible reason. Grandkids sat on my knee. I'm going to say, fuck off of here. Granddad doesn't watch Star Wars cartoons. I'm not going to do it. You can't make me.
And then you'll show them the holiday special.
Yes.
And that'll crush their hopes and dreams.
You fuckers out there need to watch the holiday Star Wars special to even begin to understand my point of view. And if you're not willing to do that, then choke on a bag of galactic dicks, because I'm not watching these cartoons. I get a little worked up, but, like, my God, 3 seasons now, people are trying to ram this goddamn cartoon down my throat, and it's not going to happen. Christine says, Jon Favreau and Fellini have already hinted about all the stuff in Mando, Boba, and the upcoming Ahsoka series are going to connect, and that we might be getting it all coming together in a cinematic film at the end.
Jesus.
Which assumed to be a Thrawn type of climax. Ahsoka series comes out this fall, and I know she's going to be after Thrawn. Like I said, I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to watch Ahsoka. I might do the Andor thing where I just let and see if it's cool, because, man, just half the shit that they've made, literally half the shit that's made has been really bad. So, like,
it's been well more than half.
Like I said, I'm just talking about the Star Wars stuff. Like, what have they, like, Mando is not bad.
Mando's borderline for me. Boba Fett's bad. Obi-Wan was bad.
Well, it's bad by reputation. We didn't even bother to watch it, but, like,
exactly. I'm not going to bother on something that everyone says is bad. The prequels are bad. The sequels are bad.
Yeah, it's been A New Hope, which, you know, is aged pretty well. Empire, which flawless, no notes. Jedi, which is flawed but a lot of fun. And then I liked Rogue One. Everything else has been bad, except for Andor and a little bit of Mandalorian. But I do like Thrawn. I am a big Thrawn fan. I would be excited to see what they do with Thrawn, but I also am scared that they will fuck up a great character.
Yeah. You know? This is how they get you.
Yeah. It's like, you know, raise your hand if you thought that there's no way they could make Boba Fett look stupid. The canonically coolest character in Star Wars, and they fucked it up. So, like, no bets are off. All bets are on. Christine continues, they're adding context to the sequel trilogy with how the First Order was able to rise after the defeat of the Empire and how Palpatine was somehow able to create a clone for himself. It's trying to bring it all together, albeit sometimes they do it better than others. It honestly doesn't bother me the way it does other people. I find it sometimes awkward to switch mentally from one thing to the other, but ultimately if the content is cool, why would I hate it on it is my perspective. The rule of cool. Sometimes beautiful things can grow when talented people try to take over after hacks and salvage the plot points that are there. But man, the New Republic is just an all-time shit show to collapse the way they did and let the Empire reconstitute. But I guess they're going for a World War I, World War II type of thing.
Sure. I can see it.
You gotta
stamp that shit out, man. Like, this is the problem. They're trying to, like, play with the kid gloves on here with the old Imperials and use what remnants they can of that system for their own ends. And you just got to stomp out every last ideal that allowed that to happen, because if you don't, it like a smoldering fire, it can rekindle itself.
Right.
And then burn your fucking house down. So yeah. Yeah, we'll see if they get there. I don't know. I mean, obviously they don't, right? Because the New Order pops up. So,
unless they just make that Star Wars Legends and just, you know, I don't know. There's nothing
Legends,
they can do
the sequels. Yikes.
There's no way they can unfuck the sequels, huh? In my opinion. Like, they had one opportunity where all the main cast of the original trilogy was alive to do something cool with the Skywalkers, and it's all done. And you know what? Good riddance. The Skywalkers, They're done. And we would do well to go on and tell bigger stories set in this awesome fucking universe. But that's just my opinion. Zach says, I caught the part of last week's cast where you guys mentioned you can hear Grogu starting to try to vocalize. I thought I would just add that pointing out all the subtitle captions for Grogu changed at the beginning of this third season from cooing to babbling, which are, of course, respectively determines for sounds a baby makes before attempting to replicate actual language. That's cooing. And the sounds that a toddler makes that are linked to language, the first attempts at actually forming words and speaking, babbling. Seems we are definitely headed for some actual first words from Grogu pretty soon. We always wondered how they would start actually aging Grogu up from a technical perspective, but it looks like, to me, this is the way. Contra to your findings here, Zach, I noticed that at least one subtitle for Grogu was subtitling him cooing still. But I take your point.
Right, and transitioning.
And also, he's actually said, like, no shit words, like, on two separate occasions. So they're definitely transitioning him to an older phase. Do they skip the toddler phase with him and he just goes right to, like, 5-6-year-old child so he can start speaking? Because, like,
I do hope they hurry it up. I don't want this to be the Raising Grogu show.
I don't know what like a teenage Grogu looks like, though. Like, they got a whole bunch invested in how cute Baby Yoda is, and once he becomes Teen Yoda, what do they do with Teen Yoda?
Well, I think they can mature his mind and his abilities, and maybe not his body quite as much. Right? He doesn't have to look like Yoda in the next 4 years. He doesn't have to have.
But that's creepy too.
Out.
Like a swaddling infant on the battlefield, cutting people down with lightsabers and force lightning and shit. Like, that's,
yeah, force
that's
lightning.
Horrifying.
Holy shit!
That's a horror show.
Yeah, yeah. No, that could be amazing also.
Okay. They have taught... Luke Skywalker has taught Grogu enough to use the Force, right? And he already instinctively used the Force enough to, like, throttle some people, attack people. And he's being trained to be a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a very amoral creed. You know, I can bring him in hot. I can bring you in cold. What does a poorly trained Jedi... strong with the Force do when living the Mandalorian creed? It seems like a recipe to make him into a dark Jedi.
Yeah, I think so. Without the guidance of Luke or some other light side Jedi, Yeah,
you know, canonically, they've never wrestled with the dichotomies that they have in the expanded universe. Like, Kyle Katarn found a way to force choke fools and force lightning fools, but still tap into the light side, because it's not the horrifying force power. It's how you use it, right? Can you use force lightning for defense? I don't know if you can just force choke someone for defense.
Sure, you I did a lot of
morally questionable shit in Jedi Knight and Dark Forces. I don't know. I don't know that you can do that. But so did Luke. I mean, look at Luke in early goings of Return of the Jedi. He's just gleefully mowing people down with his lightsaber. But anyway, Virgilio says, you and others have discussed the introduction of Katie O'Brien as a means of finding a replacement for the Cara Dune type character who will be featured in a series about the New Republic Special Forces. I think Disney is overlooking another actress who has seasons of wearing mechanized armor and playing at least one planet's most elite Marine Force. How can we get Frankie Adams' demo reel to Disney execs that need to see it? You know, if the Disney execs need to see a demo reel of a legit 6 foot plus powerful woman that has stomped around in sci-fi power armor for five seasons, I mean, they're just bad at their jobs, which I'll submit they are. I think the Star Wars executive brain trust has been shit for, I don't know, a decade, ever since they took over from Lucas. What do you think about Frankie being a New Republic marshal?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I have no problems with that. Great. That'd be awesome, because I got other plans for Miss O'Brien. She needs to be in season two of The Last of Us. And I don't want her signing some bullshit long-term deal to this outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll probably just put her on a moped anyway. So
it does feel like Disney Plus has their hooks in Katie, though. They got her. They got her on Ant-Man. They got her on Mando. They got plans. They got plans for her.
Disney has plans for everyone. That's the problem. Disney hires every actor in Hollywood for some role and then kind of keeps them on tap.
John says, are we supposed to believe this goddamn foundling snatching dragon with two sets of nostrils can't smell a campfire direct to blow its perch? For me, this is the most almost as unbelievable as the Power Ranger Vespa. How much more is Disney going to make me suspend my own belief this season? Well, I mean, also the dragon had a Mandalorian in its gullet for like 2 days. And horked it up at the most dramatically appropriate time.
Those aren't nostrils. Those are feeding tubes. Uses its mouth to carry its prey, but it doesn't actually eat through its mouth. It eats through its what you call nostrils.
Yeah. Alternatively, those are not nostrils. Those are ram air scoops that increase its oxygen potential to allow it to fly faster and stronger and at higher altitudes.
Yeah, it expels air out its backside to propel it faster, of course.
I mean, you see like cave fish or cave, like they have fully functional eyes, but they're blind. I think that's like this species smells so bad that as an evolutionary defense mechanism, they've devolved the sense of smell.
It's the babies. The babies smell awful. Once they turn into adults, they're fine. But the babies,
honestly,
are
John,
you're
sounding like a guy who hasn't watched the last four episodes of Clone Wars. If you check that out and spend 30 minutes on Wikipedia, you wouldn't have any of these problems.
All
right.
Yeah, Ahsoka will deal with all this. We'll get this in the fall.
Try being a real Star Wars fan, John. Have you ever tried loving Star Wars for real? Not just faking about it like you're doing, but just like, you know, really putting it into your heart.
Really tearing into him.
He's going to have to bathe in the bathwaters of Bald Move to atone for this sin, is what I'm saying. All right, Maddie from Philly, says, one sentiment I often see online is how this show is doing too much to set up the sequels with trying to establish a cloning storyline for Emperor Palpatine. But personally, it makes sense to me that the Imperial Remnant would look for a way to try to get Force powers into regular soldiers to combat the powers of Luke Skywalker, regardless if Palpatine was to return or not. Do you think the show is sprinkling too much pre-sequel content, rather, or are people just looking for something to hold against it?
Feels like the latter to me. Like, I get they're doing a lot of things on this show, but I don't take offense to them trying to do something to get to, you know, a Thrawn / Palpatine thing.
I mean, if they do it right,
salvaging something from the sequels and doing something cool with the transition. And then the other thing they got to figure out to do is how to get past that, you know, how to get past the Skywalker saga. I think it's kind of admirable and cool. I'm skeptical that the way they're going about it is going to get there, but it's a valid impulse to try. I mean,
you know, I feel like it hasn't felt like too much to me.
It reminds me of we're now getting into the thick of it, where there's this buffoonish New Republic stuff, and I'm like already kind of like, I don't know about this. But it's like when Angela Kang took over from The Walking Dead, and there was like, you know, a good season, a decent season, a couple of okay ones, and then just like four seasons of bullshit that she had to build a conclusion for The Walking Dead on. And I thought it was really admirable the way that she took plot points that were ludicrous when I watched them in real time. But like when you refer to them in a kind of a hazy kind of past, like, oh, this is actually a cool spin to like just imagine like what if that, but actually was handled good and use that as motivation. I think you can do that. I think you can build bridges over, past, and through bad content to get the good stuff. It just remains to be seen if the double F's can do it, because I don't know. They're just a little two guys out in the sandbox playing with their Star Wars figures. A little too reverential for that part of the experience, in a way that the guy who did Andor, I can't remember his name, who made it clear he doesn't really give a shit about the Star Wars lore. Like, it takes a person that's willing to do something out of the box to get something like that fresh and genuinely cool set in the universe. So, like I said, it's hard for me to say it's too much. I am a little worried and skeptical of the way they're doing it and the tone at which they're doing it, too. It's kind of like, you know, right, that's a scene in The Mandalorian Season 2 where the scout bikers couldn't hit a tin cup from 10 feet away. Like, that's the memes of Star Wars. If you start storytelling based on the memes of Star Wars, then you're just going to be you're just going to be consuming yourself.
I'm with you.
And it rarely comes out as cool. And it's something, it's like, I don't know. Yeah. I hate that. I hate canonically making the stormtroopers pathetic. They shouldn't be.
Yeah. Like you said, it was a meme thing that came out of the genuine attempt to make something cool in the original. They didn't set out
which
to
already,
make,
you know, like, yeah. I've said it once, I've said it a million times. Like, all of the canonical examples of stormtroopers being bad at their aim, quote unquote, was when they were deliberately trying to do a subterfuge to make the rebels think that they narrowly escaped a trap, or to avoid the rebels realizing that they were in the middle of a trap that was to be sprung. Okay. Mm-hmm. They were not fucking around on Hoth, and you saw what happened. The rebels got rolled the fuck up in like 10 minutes. And
pretty effectively
escaped.
Killed Owen and Beru. That was a horror show.
is Obi-Wan just like fucking with Luke when he's like, these blast points too precise for an Imperial storm? It's like he's, I mean, like, yeah, you have to, like, again, it's a meme, it's a funny fucking meme. Stormtroopers can't shoot and plot armor and all that kind of stuff, and there's a element of truth to it, but just to lean into that and be like, nah, canonically stormtroopers are just shit, it does violence to the setting, and I don't like it. So yeah, if they can do something cool with it, great. If not, then rip and tear until it's done. I guess that's my job as a Gen X Star Wars person,
right?
Anything else, Jim?
No.
Mando at baldmove.com. If you want to do the 40 millionth time, suggest that we watch the 17 episodes of Clone Wars, the 3 episodes of Rebels, and the Caravan of Courage. How many of you fuckers have seen the Caravan of Courage? How can you possibly understand Star Wars if you haven't seen the Caravan of Courage? I'm sorry. All you fake Star Wars fucks, get the fuck out. All the real ones, email us in at mando@baldmove.com. Follow baldmove at twitter.com/baldmove. And if you care to support us relentlessly shitting on the thing that you love, we'd love to take your money at support.baldmove.com. All right, next week, another Mando. I will not be here.
Correct.
Because I am on the desert planet of Florida. The water, it's kind of weird. It's kind of like half water, half desert. some swamp. It's got all the Star Wars biomes. And Jim will have a pinch hitter.
Yeah, Jason from Podcastica is going to be joining me. We're going to cover the next episode together.
Old friends from the Zombie Wars coming to help us in our hour of need. We'll see what he thinks, and I'll be back the week after. We'll see you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
Later.